I want to welcome any who may be visiting today. You might be able to tell from our background, we are in the midst of a series on one of the greatest Bible characters, that being David, talking about the Shepherd King. And today, I think, is a remarkable opportunity to look at some of the types of Christ that you see in the Bible represented in the life of David. And we're going to be talking about 1 Samuel. Now, just so you know where we're going to be, the whole study today is going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 25, and the message is dealing with Nabal and Abigail. Nabal and Abigail. And there's some wonderful things that we can learn here about the Lord. So if you go with me to 1 Samuel chapter 25, it says Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented him and buried him in his home at Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. Well, just in case you're wondering, who wrote the first book of Samuel? Probably wasn't Samuel, because it just said Samuel died. Did you catch that? So he didn't write the first, he didn't necessarily write the whole part of the book. It's believed that at least the last half and 2 Samuel were probably written by Nathan the prophet. You'll discover that as we get further along in our study of David. But how long was Samuel serving the Lord? You know, he may have lived to 90 years of age. Faithful prophet, a priest, the last of the judges. He's the one who transitioned from a people led by the judges. They rejected the Lord and said, we want a king like the other nations. And now the monarchies began, and Samuel lived through that whole transition. Samuel was the one, everyone says, they knew the word of God was in his mouth. He was the one that was somewhat holding Saul in check. And now with Samuel gone, David thought, the restraining influence of that great prophet out of the way, Saul is not going to hold back trying to hunt me down. And David has already had a couple of opportunities to kill him. So he thought, I better get out of town. And so David goes a little further south, and I think we've got a map that we'll put up on the screen, and I know that the font may be small, but I'll try and give you a picture of what that looked like and where he's at. Cheryl, you put the map up, please, on the screen of Carmel. Hello? In the studio, they're all talking, having fun, they're telling stories, and oh yeah, he said something. What did he say? So if you go north, you can see, remember, Dave was in the cave of Adullam, and now he's getting further and further south. This is still in the territory of Judea. The Philistines would be now closer to the ocean from where they are. We're going down to a region called Carmel, and there's two Carmels in the Bible. But if you go further south, you're getting into the region of the Ishmaelites, better known today as the Arabs. And you'll remember in the book of Judges that Gideon had a lot of problems with the people of the east. And so I wanted you to get a picture of that, because they used to raid this territory. David is there with his men. He's got about 600 men now. And he's trying to get further deep, as far as he could go, into the land of Judea, away from the area of Benjamin where Saul was king. And the land of Israel back then was not like the land of Israel today. Today, you know, it's largely a desert, and it's a land of rocks. But back in the time of David, doesn't the Bible say it was a land flowing with milk and honey? It was a beautiful place. The climate has actually changed. Keep in mind that if you go to North Africa, you can find places in the Sahara Desert where they've got rhino bones and giraffe bones and petroglyphs that were drawn of the people that once lived there, of savanna and lakes, and now it's just sand. So the climates in the last few thousand years have changed. And it is actually true that when you cut down the trees in great numbers, it doesn't draw as much moisture in off the ocean, and it can actually change the climate and the storms and the rainfall. There was a king. He was actually a sultan that had charge over the land of Israel, and he taxed the people in Israel based on how many trees they had on their land. Now, if you're going to pay tax on your trees, what do you do to your trees to lower your taxes? It was a really bad policy because for about 80 years, everybody just cut down their trees. And it kind of deforested the land of Israel. Now, then when the Romans conquered the land of Israel back in about 70 AD, you know what the Roman pattern was? They would scatter salt on the land to keep things from growing. And so when the Jews rebelled, they brought vast amounts of salt. All the fertile fields, they'd sow them with salt, and that was like a scorch and burn policy to keep them from taking care of themselves. So the land today is a little different than the land was back in David's time. This was a beautiful pasture land. The name Carmel means fruitful place or park. Now this is the different Carmel when Elijah has a showdown with the prophets on Baal. Of Baal on Mount Carmel, that's way up north. This is a Carmel that is mentioned by Joshua in the land or the territory of Judah. You read in Joshua chapter 15, I think it's like verse 55, you'll see where he's itemizing the different cities and towns that would belong to the tribe of Judah in the south. Carmel is mentioned. It's down in that region. Just didn't want you to get it mixed up with up north where Elijah was. And so he goes down there and he's in that haunt and they're trying to just, you know, live off the land and the goodness of others, but it's really tough when you are responsible to feed 600 men a day. That's a big job. And these are men that, you know, it says they were in distress and they were in debt and they were unhappy and they'd run away, and so it's an interesting bunch. So David's got that full-time job. Now, so with that background, listen to what happens here in this story. So David goes south to the land of the wilderness of Paran. And there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. They're right beside each other. Carmel is more of the fields. Maon was like the town. And the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. Sounds like Abraham. And he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. That usually happened in June when it started to dry out and the sheep were getting hot from too much wool. Now the Romans used to pluck the wool from the sheep, but the Jews would actually shear it. And there was also a time where they would slaughter, and it was a feast, and there were sacrifices. And the man's name was Nabal. And the name of his wife was Abigail. And this is unusual because they almost never mention the name of the wife unless she factors into the story somehow. She was a woman of good understanding and a beautiful appearance. But the man was harsh and evil in his doings. Have you ever heard opposites attract? He was of the house of Caleb, so he had a good lineage. Caleb was a great man. The word Caleb means bold, but the word Nabal means fool. Abigail means praise of the father. You kind of knew Abba means papa or father. And Gale means the praise or the exaltation of the father, the rejoicing of the father. She's got a good name. He's got a bad name. She's nice. He's not. She's good looking. I think he was ugly. It doesn't say that, but have you ever noticed? Is it just me, guys? Or have you ever noticed that sometimes the most beautiful women will marry the ugliest guys? And you think, he must be a great guy. Anyone, am I the only one? Like, take my wife, for example. So David heard that they were doing the sheep shearing, and this was a time of generosity, of festivities, and he's in the wilderness, that Nabal was shearing his sheep. David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And so he sends a delegation in his name. Before we go any farther, this is a unique story that tells us something about the plan of salvation. You know, there are some stories that just really you see the plan of salvation in here. But here you've got David, who is a type of who? He's a type of Christ in the Bible. It's pretty clear about that. He sends a delegation in his name. Right now there's an evil king that is ruling the land, but David has been the anointed. Christ is the anointed, right? The land is going to go to David. The world is going to go to Christ. But in advance of his being in control of the land, he said, I could use an offering right now for my men. So he sends 10 young men. And he said, go to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you, peace to your house, peace to all that you have. And you look that up, it says, shalom, shalom, shalom. David sends a message of peace. Amen? Jesus is our Prince of Peace. And he says, peace in all you have, peace to your home. How many of you would like that to come from our King David, Jesus? And he says, I've heard that you have shears, and your shepherds were with us, and we did not hurt them. Not only did we not molest them, we protected them. Nor was anything missing from all that there was with them while they were with us in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. So one thing David told his men is do not harass people. Be honest. Remember the commandments of God. Therefore, he said, you can check with your shepherds. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give what comes to your hand. I'm not asking for a percentage. I'm asking for an offering, whatever is nearby. Please give what comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David. It's a very nice message. So David's servants, he sends 10 young men. They've got their donkeys probably. And, you know, if somebody says, could I have a donation? You bring 10 donkeys. You're not expecting a little donation, you know, because you got 600 soldiers. And he was hoping, could you help us out? It's a feast day. You're being generous. We've protected everything you had from the Ishmaelites that were raiding the country and from the Philistines. And you wouldn't be doing so well now if it wasn't for the work we did for you. I know when I traveled in foreign countries, it's not uncommon in the Philippines and in Indonesia, different places. If you're looking for a parking place, there'll be these people that kind of are shepherds of the parking places. And they'll see that you're looking for a parking place, they'll go over here. And then they'll wade you in, they'll back you in, they'll guide you in, they'll tap your car and say you're okay. And when you come get your car, you give them a tip because they watch your car. And they take care of it for you. Now, you don't have to give them a tip, but it's a good idea if you want your car protected, because they'll make a note of your car if you ever come back. And so it's just customary. How many of you have seen this? You go to this, and you say, oh, thank you very much for keeping an eye on things. They appreciate it, and it's an opportunity for you as a Christian to do good to somebody. And so he said, look, we've taken care of your stuff. And so Nabal listens, and he's scowling. He is a covetous man. And they spoke to him, just what David gives him a message. They are heralds, messengers for David. Nabal answered David's servants, and he says, listen to this harsh answer. Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? Now, did he know who David was? The very fact that he says, who is the son of Jesse? The messengers didn't mention Jesse. He knew David was the son of Jesse. Anyone as wealthy and connected as Nabal, they all knew what was going on with Saul and David, and that there was this contest about who was going to be the next king. But his answer is like the answer of Pharaoh when Moses said, let my people go. Pharaoh says, who is the Lord? You know what that means? I don't believe in the Lord. He said, I don't believe, I don't recognize you. And then he goes further. I mean, he could have said, you know, I'm a little tired, don't have enough for just my servants. If he had said that, it would have been okay. But he reviles, he rebukes. And then he goes on and says, there are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. There are a lot of runaway slaves these days. David used to be Saul's servant. What happened? You're a runaway. And all those guys who are following you, they were in debt, couldn't pay their servants, ran away. Runaway slave. You want me to feed a bunch of runaway slaves? I got to feed my slaves that stay with me. I mean, it's really insulting. It's degrading what he's saying. I just want you to understand that in the terms of the day, it was pretty low. And he says, shall I take my bread, my water, then my meat? See, they also have sacrifices that I've killed for my shears and give it to men, but I don't know where they've come from. He says, I three times and my four times. This is a selfish dude. He makes me think about that passage where the devil says, I will exalt my throne above. I will be king. I will be like the Most High. I. So Nabal is my. Very selfish. So David's young men, when they heard that, they turned on their heels. You ever heard that expression before? This is where it comes from. Any of you ever in the military? And military is very efficient. And so if you're going to change directions in the military, you do about face. And you just, you see, you put your toe down there. You go like that. I sort of remember. It's not near as good as it used to be. But 5 years old, I was in military school. Turning on your heels. It doesn't mean you go, well, or we'll see you later. It means you go, I'm out of here. And you leave right away. They were insulted. They snapped around and they said, whoa. They didn't even try to reason with him. They could have said, well, now, can we talk to you about that? And we, you know, check with your... They said, wow, that answer is so abrupt and so rude. There is no reasoning with this guy. He has totally rejected our kind request for a donation. That's all they're asking for. His young men turned on their heels, and the other servants are watching, because when these 10 guys come marching into a camp of a man who's got 3,000 sheep, 1,000 goats, it's 4,000, he's got a lot of shepherds, a lot of shears, a lot of servants, they see this delegation come in. People were listening. The steward was probably standing there listening, which is a good thing. They turned on their heels, and the expression on their face was one of indignation and outrage. And on the way back to David, they were not happy. They were hungry too. Then they come back, and David's men turned on their heels. They came and told all these words. And David said to his men, every man gird on his sword. So every man girded on his sword. Now wait a second, this is not the same David. You notice we've been reading a lot about David. David hasn't lost his temper. Only time David got mad is at Goliath up until now. Isn't that right? Now something's come over David. Last week we talked about vengeance and mercy. Saul was completely obsessed with vengeance, David with mercy. But now David is saying, I'm going to avenge myself. That's no way to talk to anybody. And he wasn't only going to go after Nabal, he was going to go after everybody in his house. And he says, gird on your sword. 400 men went with David, 200 stayed with the supplies. 400 was probably more than enough to dispatch Nabal's household. And one of the young men told Abigail, maybe one of the servants or the stewards of Nabal who had heard this whole exchange, while his servants go back, one of the servants of Nabal goes to Abigail. He says, I can reason with her, saying, look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us. Now remember, who does David represent? Christ. And his men, his servants, his angels. Very good to us. Nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were with them in the fields. And notice this. They were a wall to us by night and day. All the time we were with them keeping the sheep. You remember when Jesus appears, shepherds are keeping their sheep. And it tells us here that his minutes is like were a wall to him. You can read in 1 Samuel 25:16. It says, they were a wall to us by night and day. Do you know if you read in Psalms 34:7, the angel of the Lord encamps all around those who fear him and delivers them. Does the Lord give us walls to protect and bless? What was Satan's accusation against God regarding Job? You've set a wall about him. That's what the hedge means. You protect him, and you're protecting all that he has. David was a wall around Nabal and Abigail and their household, protecting everything. But did they appreciate, well, did Nabal appreciate the blessings of David? And when the time came to show that appreciation, he sent him away empty. We would never do that. You see where I'm going with this? This is not a story about just David and Nabal and Abigail. It's a story about the gospel and us. And he gives a harsh answer. He says, who is the Lord? You know, it's interesting. The Bible says the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And you know what the word Nabal means? I told you, remember? Fool. Who is David? It's like people say, who is Jesus? I don't know Jesus. Is it Jesus? No, I don't know Jesus anything. And so now this servant of Nabal is telling Abigail, these men were very good to us. They didn't harass us. Nothing was ever missing from the tent. We slept well at night. They protected us from the Amalekites and the Ishmaelites and the Philistines. And you wouldn't have had all this blessing if it wasn't for those men. You remember what happened with Keilah? The Philistines were raiding the people, and David came and delivered them. They're saying, he's delivered us. And so there they're giving this message, Zechariah 2:5. For I say, says the Lord, I will be a wall of fire around her, and I will be the glory in her midst. When the Egyptians wanted to destroy the children of Israel, God brought the pillar of fire as a wall to protect them. So David was a wall. And so now David is upset, and he gets upset. He said, you know, enough is enough. I've been the nice guy with Saul, but this is too much. And I guess he was worried about his men. They were hungry. And they'd done all this work, and they thought they should be paid. Now, James 1:9 says, so then, my beloved, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. This is one time when David, it's not the best portrait of David when he's starting out losing his temper. And so his men are all armed for war now. And the servants of Abigail are saying, they were very good to us. They were walled day and night while we were with them keeping the sheep. And the servant goes on verse 17. I'm in 1 Samuel 25:17. Now therefore know and consider what you will do. You better do something. For harm is determined against our master. He saw their faces when they left. He saw how they turned on their heels. And against all his household. For he, now listen, this is really unusual for the servant to talk to Abigail the way he does about their master. But I guess Nabal was so notorious that he could speak freely. For he is such a scoundrel. Sometimes you've heard the word sons of Belial, or a worthless one. He is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him. You cannot reason with him. Then Abigail made haste. She thought, oh no, I've got to do something. She made haste. She realized not just her life, but the life of the household was at risk. And she took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seahs of roasted grain, these are sacks of grain ready to eat, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs. They used to make these delicious cakes of figs because they got so much sugar that they stick together, and they put some flour in, and they last a long time, and loaded them on donkeys, probably 10 donkeys just like they had come down with. But you know, you have to admire. I really appreciate all those that help in the kitchen. And the women have an in particular. I know some of the men help a lot in the kitchen, but women have a special gift. You ever notice unexpected company comes, and they can rustle around. They put water in the soup. They do something. All of a sudden, there's food appears out of nowhere. Abigail's got to cater for an army or die. And she puts together a feast. Quickly, she gets all these things. She starts ordering servants. They're running, and who knows where Nabal is. He doesn't know what's going on. And they make haste. And she says to her servants, verse 19, go on before me. See, I'm coming after you. She sends the gifts on before. Now, you know, that's not the first time that's happened in the Bible. When the Queen of Sheba came, you know how she sent gifts. Because she was going to have this audience. How many of you remember when Jacob was coming back? Not that any of you are old enough to actually remember, but I mean, you remember reading in the Bible, when Jacob was coming back from living in Mesopotamia, that Esau got word, and he was coming with 400 soldiers. And they were going to annihilate his family because Esau had probably been fuming for 20 years now about what Jacob had done in stealing the birthright. And he's thinking, you're coming back to take the birthright. You're coming back to take those possessions that are mine. Jacob knew what his brother was thinking. They were twins. So he gets all of this great gift together, and he sends it ahead of the family. So they all bow down and they say to Esau, here's these gifts. This is from, and basically he's saying to Esau, I don't want anything from you. I want to give to you. The Lord's blessed me. I'm not here for dad's inheritance. I'm here because I just want to be home. And so by the time Jacob gets there and he sees Esau, Esau kisses him, where he had come with armed men to kill. The gifts that go out before can save your life. And the Bible kind of teaches that. Psalms 50. You might make a note of this one. Psalms 50. Our God shall come and not keep silent. A fire will devour before him. It will be very tempestuous all around him. He will call to the heavens from above and to the earth that he may judge his people. Gather my saints together to me. He's talking about when we are caught up to meet the Lord in the air. Those who have made a covenant with me by sacrifice. Now, are we saved by our gifts? Or do our gifts show we believe in the covenant that we've made? But people who say, Lord, Lord, and send them away empty, you wonder, do they really believe that he's the Lord? The giving of an individual is a really interesting indicator of where they are spiritually. Didn't the Bible say, wherever a man's heart is, that's where his treasure is? Proverbs 18:16, a man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. And the gift goes out of him. So here, Abigail is saying, have all these gifts come out again. We're hoping we can appease his wrath before we ever get there. You go before me with the gifts. Hey, you remember reading where it talks about those who have died in the Lord, their works do follow them. Your works follow you, but your gifts go ahead. And so, with all this happening, though, she doesn't tell her husband. Now, I believe husbands and wives should communicate on big financial decisions. Do we all agree? If you're getting ready to cater a big army like that, you should probably talk together. But if you're married to Nabal, you get a pass. If it's a life or death situation, she couldn't reason with him. I mean, isn't that what the servant just said? There's no talking to him. And he had just insulted the one who was to be king. And that was a really bad move. And so she needed to take a preemptive action. I got to admit it, it's hard. But sometimes our wives get us out of a lot of trouble. Sometime a man is ready to strap on his sword, go charging off to avenge our name. And a wife will say, let's think about this for just a minute. Go take a walk. Just breathe deeply. Wasn't it a woman who saved the spies that came? How many of you remember the story that during, it actually comes up later in the episodes of David, that Joab, the general, surrounds a city because a rebel, someone who's trying to start a rebellion in Israel named, Sheba. He was hiding out in this city, and Joab and the soldiers of Israel, they all surrounded the city, and they were going to kill everybody in the city. And a woman goes up on the wall of the city and says, where's Joab? And Joab says, here I am. She says, I want to talk to you. Come here. They're having this conversation from the wall. And she said, I'm a mother in Israel. You're getting ready to kill us all for this one rebel. And they talk together, and they finally come to agreement. He says, look, we don't want to do that. We don't want to hurt anybody in the city, but there's someone who's rose up against David that you're protecting in the city. She said, let me go talk to the people. I'll be back. She talks to him. She comes back. She said, we're going to toss his head over the wall. Now, I'm not recommending that we solve our problems that way, but I'm just telling you that it was a woman that came out and interceded that brought peace. Now, what does a woman represent in Bible analogies often. So who is it that brings peace? The house of Nabal is doomed. Judgment is coming. Abigail goes forward and she begins to become the agent of peace in this. So it was that she rode on her donkey. She went down under cover of a hill. They may have been tracking where David's servants had gone, and they're going down through the hill because he was living off in the wilderness. And wouldn't you know, there were David and his men coming down towards her. There's this clearing, and all of a sudden, these two come together, and he's not sure who this is yet. And she dismounts. And David is thinking to himself when he meets Abigail, the thoughts that are going through his head, you find in verse 21, he said, "Surely in vain I protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness so that nothing was missed of all that belongs." He's reciting over and over in his mind the right that he's got to kill this man. "And he's repaid me evil for good. May God do so to me and more also to the enemies of David if I leave one male of all who belong to him living by light." He's just made a vow. He's going to kill her whole household. They are under judgment. Now Abigail sees David. So he tells you what was going through his head as he's on his way with 400 soldiers. David's probably leading. Abigail sees David. She dismounts quickly from the donkey. She falls on her face before David. She bows down to the ground as though he's a king. Now look at the difference. Nabal says, "Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse?" She's treating him very differently. So she fell at his feet, and she says, "On me, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant." Well, should she suffer for Nabal? She didn't do it. Nabal did it. But here she is saying, "I want to be the substitute. You blame me." Now, isn't that kind of what Jesus does for us? He says, "I'll take it." Was she guilty? No, but she's willing to take the guilt of her husband. "Speak in the ears, and let me hear, say a few words. Please," she didn't wait for permission, she keeps going. Verse 25, "Please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal." That's your husband. "For as his name is, so he is. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him." Now, the way that comes off in the Hebrew is, "Fool is his name, and folly is with him." He's doing just as his name indicates. "But I, your maidservant, did not see the young man." Be patient. We didn't know that you came. He is, don't take it out on the whole household. He is an ornery person. And we're more reasonable. We didn't know you had come. We didn't know. "Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed," I found you before you've gone to bloodshed. She knew what was going on. "And from avenging yourself with your own hand." Now just, you know, we studied last week how wonderful it was that David had read the words of Moses that said, "Vengeance is the Lord's, I will repay." And David could have said when the messengers came back from Nabal being insulted, "Well, God, we'll put this in your hands. You'll take care of it." That would have been the right response. But I think the Lord allowed all this to happen the way it did, not only to teach David a lesson, but to teach you and I a gospel story. Because Jesus is coming with judgment. And intercession is needed. And so here she is. She's a very intelligent woman. As a matter of fact, I'll put to you that I think she fills the role of a prophet here. You see what you think. I think Abigail was not only beautiful and bright, I think the words she speaks here are certainly prophetic. "And now, this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord," I'm in verse 27, "let it be given to the young men that follow my Lord." She doesn't say given to you, because there's no present. You're a king. It's not even worthy of you, but the men are hungry. "Let me give it to them. Please forgive." She comes asking for forgiveness and saying, "Let the fault be on me. Please forgive the trespass." You notice what's happening here? This is Abigail interceding. What is part of the work of the church? Well, the work of Jesus is to be an intercessor. Are we a nation of kings and priests in the church? And didn't Jesus say, "As the Father sent me, so send I you"? Is the Christian life one where you're just praying for yourself, or are you interceding in behalf of others too? Jesus ever lives to make intercession for us. Here she is interceding. She is what you call here a mediator. Nabal was wrong. He was vile. He was wicked. He was mean. David is now coming with judgment. There's this conflict. And she puts herself between these two men where there's going to be a bloodbath. And she stops it from happening. Kind of like Pocahontas saved John Smith. Any of you know your American history, you know what I'm talking about. And she puts herself between this conflict. But isn't that what the church is supposed to do? Isn't the world lost under sin? Isn't Jesus the Son of David coming? Doesn't the Revelation talk about the wrath of the Lamb? Here you see a picture, one of the few times you see the wrath of David. And he's coming with his sword girded. And there's going to be blood. And all of a sudden she stops. She comes between, in the middle. Between where David dwells and where Nabal dwells, there she is, pleading. And she said, "Forgive the trespass of your maidservant." It wasn't her fault, but she's taking the place. "For the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house." Won't the house of Jesus endure? "Because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days." Now, do you see, that's not just talking about David. Who is it that was sinless? No evil found in him. It's Jesus. "Yet a man has risen to pursue you and to seek your life." Saul was like filling the role of the devil. David was not recognized as king. But, and this is a beautiful statement, "But the life of my Lord will be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. And with the lie and the lives of your enemies, he will sling out as from the pocket of a sling." Now, she's picking the right metaphors for David, isn't she? The shepherd understood, and the stone gets hurled away. You never find it again. It's gone. But a shepherd used to keep his valuables wrapped up tight against his body near the bosom. And she's saying, you will be wrapped up by the bosom or the heart of the Lord. Your enemy, Saul, he is going to get slung out. Now what she's saying is, you know, is pretty bold, because Saul was king. David was not king. She's saying, my loyalty is to you. I'm also believing that Abigail was from the tribe of Judah, maybe even a distant relative of David. "A man has risen to pursue you. But he will be slung out as from the pocket of a sling." David's going, I understand that. I understand slings. "And it will come to pass that when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you ruler over Israel." Now, notice her faith. Does she have any doubt that David's going to be the king? No, she's got complete confidence. "That this will not grieve you or be an offensive heart to my Lord, that you have shed blood without cause, that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant." She's basically saying, I've come today to intercede. You don't want to do this thing and avenge yourself and shed blood. Because, I mean, you know, he's not only going to kill Nabal, he says, I'm going to kill every servant, every male servant in his house. And she said, you're going to have regrets about that when you become king. God sent me to spare you having a guilty conscience over these things and to bring reconciliation, to reason with you. And you sent men for gifts, here are the gifts. If this is not enough, there'll be more. But it's interesting that she would say, did you catch it? Remember me. When you become king, she didn't say if you become king. Show mercy on me. And she said, you know, I know you're going to be the king of the country sometime. All right, let me go back here. It says, so, verse 29, verse 30, verse 32. "Remember your maidservant," it says at the end of verse 31. "Then David said to Abigail," finally David speaks, everything else is Abigail, wonderful section she speaks there. "And then David said to Abigail, 'Blessed is the Lord God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, And blessed are you because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed. You notice the first thing that David sends, he sends through messengers, shalom, shalom, shalom. Now David says to Abigail in person, blessed, blessed, blessed. What are the first teachings that Jesus gives? They're called the Beatitudes, which means have a good attitude. The Beatitudes, the word Beatitude means the blessings. And Jesus says, blessed, blessed, blessed. Here David, the son of Jesus' ancestor, rather, is going, blessed, blessed, blessed. Because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and avenging myself in my own head. David, you could reason with him. He was a man after God's own heart. The Holy Spirit told him, this is not God's plan. For indeed, he lets her know, and she's probably shuddering, along with the servants that are minding all the goods. For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who had kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to me, you had to hurry, and come to me to meet me, surely by morning, light no males would have been left to Nabal. Now, just in case you're wondering if David could do that, you read, and it tells us that David, when he was staying in Ziklag, he would go raid cities of the Philistine. He would execute everybody so there were no witnesses. He had the capability of doing that. Said, I was going to do that to you. So, David received from her hand what she had brought to him and said to her, go up in peace, again, shalom, to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person. He says, okay, you have succeeded. Unless you had made haste, they would have been doomed. Now, just want to pause here and think about this. How do we relate to this today? What does this say to us? I think there's some very important lessons. You notice that we started out with a parable about a rich fool. And when God blessed, instead of thinking, God's blessed me so that I can share, he says, God's blessed me so I can hoard. They got programs now about hoarders. People that, you know, some of them is just a real sickness. A lot of us have a mild case of hoarding. You just look in your closet, in your garage. Karen and I thought we were doing okay until we moved. And then you thought, well, I've been keeping this for 20 years. Never used it. But God doesn't bless us so that we can hoard. God blesses us so that we can be a blessing to others. And he blessed this rich man. And instead of him thinking, oh, I can give more, he thinks, I can hoard more. He says, I'll build bigger barns and I can not have to worry. And I'll say, you can retire early. Make my first million by 35. Eat, drink, and be merry. And then God says, you fool, this day is your soul required of you. And then whose will those things be that you've laid up? Now, you haven't found out about Nabal yet, what's going to happen to him. I suspect you've already read the story. But here David sends messengers and says, we are fighting God's battles. Could you help subsidize my army? And Nabal sends them away with an insult. And he was of the same tribe as David. Does Jesus have people out fighting his battles? Are we supposed to help support the messengers from David? This is not an appeal for pastors. I'm talking about the work of God. And David is going to come someday, and there's going to be judgment. Now, he's going to come, he's going to bring early judgment on Nabal's household, except she comes to intercede. So, we know who David represents, Christ. Who does Abigail represent? Beautiful woman, very wise. She's a type of the church. What are we supposed to do? We're to be praying to Christ for mercy for the lost that don't know any better. They act like fools because the fool does not know about God. And we are to be pleading for their salvation. And the gifts that she brings to David are saving Nabal's household. When we give to the work of Christ, it's to save the lost, isn't it? Not just to save ourselves. And so this is all the story of salvation. Just here inserted, it says Samuel dies and then David goes back to his other exploits, but this interesting story is dropped in here. And so, reading on, David received from her hand the gift she had brought, said, go in peace. Now Abigail went to Nabal, verse 36. And he was holding the feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. The only time that the wicked are happy is when they're drunk. They have nothing else to be happy about. He is participating in what you call a fool's feast. You can read in Proverbs 31:6, it says, give wine to him that is ready to perish. Nabal didn't know it, but he was ready to perish. He's drinking himself drunk. So in the morning, when the wine had gone from him, he begins to sober up after that required 8 hours go by and his alcohol blood level dropped. His wife told him these things, that his heart died with him. He was not only a fool, he was a coward. And he realized how close he had come to death's door. His heart died within him and he became like a stone. And I looked at all the commentators. It doesn't mean that he became a stone like, you know, some fable. It means that he probably had a stroke from fear and gluttony and drinking, and which lingered for several days. He became like a stone. Then it happened, after about 10 days, the Lord struck Nabal and he died. It's interesting, David sends 10 donkeys. Nabal dies after 10 days, and he had probably broken all 10 commandments during his feast. And so there was that judgment. So David heard, you notice how the story begins, David heard that Nabal was shearing. Here it says David heard that Nabal was dead. Does David know what's going on in Nabal's family? Does Jesus hear what's happening down here? Does he hear what's happening down here? Yeah. You spell that two different ways. And so when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, blessed be the Lord, who has pleaded the cause of my reproach. Instead of all those innocent people dying because they were part of his household, God took care of Nabal. Doesn't God say, vengeance is mine? Let me take care of it in my time. And blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head. And I don't know how much time went by. There might have been, you know, the customary 30 days of mourning. But not long after this, it says, and David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as his wife. I think when David heard Abigail, now you've got to know the background to this. While David is living out in the hills running from King Saul, remember Saul had given his daughter Michal to David. And Michal helped David escape. But Saul is really worried that David's going to be king. And if he's married to the king's daughter, that gives him one more right to the throne. And so Saul did something pretty despicable. Saul told Michal, I am divorcing you from David. He's a fugitive. And he gave Michal to someone else to marry, because he didn't want David to have any connection to the throne. So David at this point is wifeless. When he sees Abigail, a beautiful woman, bright woman, spirit-filled woman, he was very struck. And I'm not saying he was coveting his neighbor's wife, but he made a mental note. That is a very, very good-looking, a very bright woman. And this is very important that you think of this, because there's another time in David's life he sees someone else's wife, and he doesn't have so much restraint. This time he restrains himself. He could have seen Abigail that day when she brought her gifts and said, wow, I'm going to go kill Nabal and take you. Not forget about the gifts and the intercession, but David said, all right, I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to accept the intercession. I'm going to let Nabal live. He could have killed Nabal and just taken his wife. But he did it God's way, and God took care of it. Which makes you wonder, I hope I'm not getting too far ahead of myself, if God had not taken Bathsheba, do you realize Jesus came through? No, if David, thank you. If David, that's why you need a good wife in the audience. If David had not taken Bathsheba and Jesus came through the line of Bathsheba, maybe God would have worked that out a different way. I mean, it's hypothetical, you don't know. But David put it all in God's hands and he presents a proposal. Now, Abigail doesn't have to say yes. He sends servants and David has sent us. We've come in the name of David to ask you to be his wife. What's going to happen to the church? Is there going to be a wedding? Is the bride of Christ going to live in the New Jerusalem? That's why it's called the bride of Christ. She arose and she bowed her face to the earth and she said, "Here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord." You know, that's another reason I think she's a beautiful type of the church. Didn't Jesus say to the church, "I've come to you as one that serves. You need to serve each other." She says, "I have come, I'm willing to wash it." She is a very wealthy woman. She's a very humble woman. And the church is very wealthy too, isn't it? We inherit everything from Christ. It says, "And David took her." Now, you know she's wealthy because it says in verse 42, "So Abigail rose in haste." She's in haste again. She's haste to come to David earlier to save the father. Now David proposes. She comes in haste. She saw David was good looking too, wasn't he? I mean, you've been married to Nabal for years. What a happy ending. Now, some of you that have difficult situations, don't be wishing that. Smite him like a stone. And she rose and she has five maidens. You realize when Jacob marries Rachel and Leah, they each have one maiden, Bilhah and Zilpah. She is so wealthy, she's got five maidens that follow her. But she says, "I'll wash the feet. I am your servant." What a humble attitude. And she became David's wife. It ends with a beautiful story of a marriage. And I just thought that this is really telling us about the plan of salvation. Our David is coming. Now, you know what this means? Evidently, Abigail and Nabal had no children. David does have children with Abigail. By the way, in case you're wondering, some of David's kids ended up badly. Abigail's kids were not among them. The offspring of Abigail, she raised them to serve the Lord. They were godly. They coexisted with Solomon, and they did fine. She was a good mother, too. She had no children with Nabal, which means not only did David end up getting Abigail, he got everything that belonged to Nabal. And this was an important story in the Bible because David now goes from, through the inheritance he gets through marrying Abigail, how wealthy was Nabal? He's the richest man in the country. David now is moving closer to being a king because he suddenly, for the first time in years, has substance at his disposal through his marriage to Abigail. David ends up owning the land that Nabal had. Now, I hope you're still with me. Nabal was selfish with David. He lost it all. David got it all. Isn't Jesus going to get this whole world soon? The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. So if David sends messengers and says, "Could you please do something to support my army?" Should we send them away empty? How much of what we have belongs to God? All of it belongs to God. Everything belongs to the Son of David. He's going to get the land. And he's going to get his bride. And so the whole gospel story is wrapped up in here. That's why I think it's important for us to remember that we're doing the work of Abigail. We are the church. And we should be willing to give of ourselves as servants. That's what she did. To be make a covenant with David through marriage. That's what baptism is a type of. And to offer all that we are and all that we have to him. And it says she did it in haste. You know, I thought it would be appropriate for us to sing a conclusion, "Take the world, but give me Jesus." Amen? Amen. Did she end up with a love relationship with David? Should we have a love relationship with Jesus, the Son of David? Is Pastor Doug just hallucinating? Or do you see the gospel in this story? Help me, you know? I see it's a beautiful allegory of the plan of salvation. And there's some important lessons in here for us not to be fools. You know, in the parable, what does Jesus say to that rich man that hoards stuff? "You fool." What was Nabal's name? Fool. He died and he lost everything. That's why it's important to seek first God's kingdom. Let's stand as we sing 329, and then we'll close with prayer.